today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Patrick, I just discovered some really chilling song lyrics.
Oh, really? What are they?
Listen to this. Go teach the bulldogs to behave. Send the yellow jackets to a watery grave.
Oh, man, that's hardcore.
All right, we're back, Patrick.
Yes, we are.
We took a few days off.
Got some people covering our backs.
Yes.
Because we were really busy. We were doing a lot of things.
Busy. We had,
I know.
We had some interviews that got confirmed and came up kind of quickly.
Yep.
And so we realized with all the interviews we were going to be recording that maybe we need a little break from the daily grind of putting out the podcast. And so we put out the call, and some of the hardcore listeners came through and recorded some of their own episodes for us. It's an amazing thing.
It's great when we send a signal out and people come to our rescue. It's great.
So let me thank those folks real quick from earlier this week. You heard Randall Brown.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
His first time doing a guest episode.
It was awesome.
It was great. So thanks, Randall.
Thanks
for
Randall.
That. Also, we had Mike Wagner, who has contributed guest episodes in the past.
Rock
and
solid.
Always really knows his stuff. We had a new guest contributor, Ben Montgomery.
Yeah, it's great to hear Ben.
And
his buddy Wayne.
Yeah, and they do a podcast called Records Revisited that they just recently launched. So check that out when you can.
Got to check that out and subscribe.
And then yesterday we heard from BJ Bonin.
Yes.
Who had contributed a guest episode in the past.
Yep. Thanks, BJ.
About the cello, I believe. But then for this episode, he brought along his friend Laura Paleman.
Yeah.
So that was great to hear. It was really fun.
Thanks, guys.
And I'm always really impressed with the level of creativity that the guests also bring. They record like like intros and do some really clever things with the show. So thanks again for everyone who helped us out there.
Yep.
And by the way, this is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
So what are we doing today here on Friday?
Okay, this is cool. So during my day job, you guys have all heard me talk about this. I work with aspiring music writers, and we're going to have a quick interview with one of them today. And what's really fascinating about Anna Rakkinen is that not only is she a writer, but she has held other really interesting jobs. One, she was the director of the University of Alabama radio station. So she talks about college radio and what her jobs were there and how she got a show. And that's really fun.
Wait, hang on. Okay.
Okay.
So time out here. The University of Alabama college radio station.
Uh-huh.
And is there any content non-football related on that radio station?
Apparently so. Those are the people
they give
that,
them 10 minutes to do music. And the rest of the time they talk about the Tide.
Yeah, those are like the 15 people that don't go to the University of Alabama football games but went to the school, I think, that hang out there. Yeah.
So they're not talking about like the backup long snapper or that kind of thing, right?
No.
Okay.
Who they recruited.
Yeah. Yes, to be the backup long snapper.
Right,
that's right.
Also, she did an internship this summer at Red Eye Distribution in Hillsboro, North Carolina, which is the hometown of Yep Rock Records, and also the first company the founders of Yep Rock started, Red Eye Distribution. So they got a lot of their background from that, so she did that. She also did a study abroad in Finland, and during that time, she wrote for a magazine out of London called The Quietist, which is a music and culture magazine, which is really cool. So she's an all-around really cool person, and I'm really happy to introduce her to the Rockin' Suburbs community.
Great. So should we roll the tape on this interview?
Let's do it.
All right.
On the phone with me, all the way from Alabama, is Anna Rakkinen. Anna, how are you?
I'm great. Patrick, how are you?
I'm doing good, and I'm glad to talk to you. You know, you and I have known each other now for a while just through writing stuff, and you've had so many cool music experiences, and I want to introduce you to the Rockin' the Suburbs community. Thank you for coming on and doing this.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I feel honored to be on the Burbs podcast.
Oh, thanks. Well, you know, we're worldwide. We're bad, we're worldwide. This is what we say. I'm really kind of interested to hear a little more about the side of you I don't know a ton about, which is college radio, and also with a really cool internship last summer where You were in Hillsborough, North Carolina, which is also the home of Yep Rock Records, whose founders we have interviewed on this show. So tell me a little bit about, first of all, that internship experience at Red Eye Worldwide. Were you just packing records in the warehouse all day, or what was that like?
Well, that pretty much nailed it. I was definitely packing records and CDs a lot of the time I was there. That's probably the highlight of what I did at Red Eye. I remember doing a lot of auditing with some of their database stuff, but I truly enjoyed like the more dirty work that we were given, because there was a lot of really cool releases that the interns got to get their hands on. I don't know. I just, people don't really consider the side of music distribution, I think, very much.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, it's very businessy. There's a lot of very rigid aspects to it. It's not always super glamorous, but I became really passionate about the company, honestly. I really came to love a lot of the labels that they distribute for that I might have been a little bit familiar with before, but I'm definitely way more familiar with now. A big one I really loved was Warp. They have so many cool electronic acts.
Yeah.
A lot of them are out of the UK, but they are definitely worldwide. And not long before I came to Red Eye last May, they acquired Stones Throw, which was really exciting for me because I've been a Stones Throw fan for a long time. But yeah, it was definitely a lot of packing records to get to your original question, but it was super interesting. I honestly really loved being there.
I'm really interested also to hear about your time on the college radio station in Tuscaloosa at WVUA FM 90.7. You were the music director there. Is that correct?
I was.
Yep.
Yeah. It was only for a semester last spring, but it was a really good experience. It was really hard work. I think a lot of people. Well, I just have a lot of respect for music directors, not only in college radio, but in radio in general, because if you don't really come from a background where you have to prioritize your work and your requests from people, all of a sudden when you take on this job and you get, you know, I don't know, maybe 200 plus emails a day requesting that you put stuff on air, it was extremely overwhelming. So I had to learn, you know, how to say no or how to articulate, you know, I don't think this record is good and I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess you started out as a show host, right?
I did, yes.
Now, what was the process of applying for that show like?
I think it's changed, but when I first got here, which was in 2016, they require that you take at least a semester being just an on-air DJ,
okay,
which I did, which can be a little bit dull, but I guess it's just to warm you up to speaking on air. And then I took on my show that spring, and I remember I pitched them a couple show ideas that I had. One was it was like TV soundtracks, and in hindsight, it wasn't a very good idea, I don't think. I don't think I'd planned it out very well, but I was just kind of like, I want to play TV soundtracks on air and see how that goes.
Right.
And they were like, maybe don't do that. But they said that they had a gap in their programming and they needed something that veered a little bit more like R&B or soul music.
Oh, okay.
And they asked me if I was interested and I said that I would do it. I just wanted to have a little bit of my own flair on it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was essentially the premise. I sort of ran with it and I was really comfortable with that genre of music. So my process was I guess I did it for maybe off and on at least a year and a half. I'm trying to think how long I've been in school. I don't know. But I definitely would spend a lot of my time looking back at older R&B albums and finding stuff that I hadn't really been familiar with. I remember, I think this was the first time I had ever heard like Sly and the Family Stone and all these iconic soul artists from like the 70s. And then I would keep up with new releases and R&B as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was honestly pretty laid back at the time, especially once they recognized that you were a good host and you were reliable and you would show up to your shift.
Yeah.
I was sort of left to my own devices. However, I think other stations are a little bit more stringent with how they select their hosts and how they make sure that their on-air programming is running really tight. I know some college radio stations let just community members come in and have shows as well.
Right, right.
Which was not something that we had. And I think now at my station, things have changed a bit. They make you record at least a couple demos before they allow you to go on air. I think they've definitely tightened up the process a little bit, which I don't know if I'll have another show before I graduate school. I definitely considered it, but I just don't think I'm very cut out to be an on-air personality, and that's fine. I really enjoyed the behind-the-scenes stuff a little more.
So let me ask you a little bit about your musical background and how your taste has developed, because you wrote about a really nice piece on Liz Phair's 25th anniversary of Exile in Guyville. You wrote about Playboi Carti. You wrote a live review of My Bloody Valentine. And then the thing that really, you know, struck me the most was a longer form piece you did where you did some original interviews on the band Broadcast and their album Ha Ha Sound, which was marking a 15th anniversary. So how did you develop this taste that's so wide ranging and deep, and also, you know, kind of cued into key records from the 80s and 90s?
I guess everything I've pursued in my own taste has usually been very pop centric, and that's sort of the thread that I've found the longer I listen to music and what draws me to things.
Mm-hmm.
It has to have some sort of pop, you know, aspect to it, or a lot of times I have a hard time connecting with music that doesn't have some kind of pop quality. So, I mean, I know when I was young, and this definitely isn't groundbreaking of a memory to have. Plenty of people probably have the same one, but the first record I was really ever introduced to was Rumors by Fleetwood Mac,
okay.
And just the variety on that album alone, I think, really exposed me to a lot of different sensibilities and stuck with me forever, and really just sort of buried themselves into my head, and I think formed the way I approached music for the rest of my life.
Mm.
And my mom was always a little bit more of a pop head as well. I mean, we always listened to the classic rock station, and if ever this might drop your listenership, but if ever like a Led Zeppelin song came on, she would always turn it off. And you know, as I like got older and wanted to have a more well-rounded music knowledge, I went back and I listened to Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd and all that stuff. That just wasn't really what I was raised on.
Sure.
And I grew up in Atlanta, so I was always exposed to a lot of rap and hip hop, and I think that had a huge influence as well, just because, I mean, this will age me, I suppose, but in the late 2000s, during sort of the end of the Bling era in rap, there was just, I think, a lot of really interesting things happening in rap. It was becoming very... it was constantly reinventing itself, and I was just always drawn to these albums and these songs that were, you know, really quite melodic, and they were becoming radio hits, which I think was quite new for rap at the time.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I guess that's the best way I can think to summarize all that. It's just, it's always been about pop, and that's of course changed as I've gotten older and have pushed myself to explore more things, but you know, I enjoy things that challenge the pop form as well and turn it on its head. And I think that's why I've really been drawn to like Broadcast or Stereo Lab or even like, you know, Built to Spill or bands like that that really explore what a pop song can be. And I just think it's so exciting.
Thank you. You also work at a record store, right, in Tuscaloosa?
I do, yes.
And how often do you work there? Is it like a part-time gig?
It is a part-time gig. I work about 3 days a week, 2 to 3 days a week or so.
And what's that like? Are you surrounded by other record heads at that place?
It depends. I think going into it, I thought it was going to be very much like the high fidelity stereotype of record guys. But my experience has really been, I think, quite unique from other people who work in record stores. I think a lot of it has to do with being in the region that I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even though our store is in a college town, I would be willing to say that Tuscaloosa is quite unique as a college town in that the focuses and the culture here are not necessarily not interested in art or things like that. We certainly have a very robust art scene and a lot of really wonderful creative things to do here. But the culture of people being huge record heads is just not something that I think is really, really strong here, even though it might exist on a very like small level.
Yeah.
So a lot of my fellow employees have always been people that, a lot of college students, and generally we kind of have people who are into different, very specific areas.
Okay.
So we always have like a country person or someone who's really into metal, but, it's a really unique staff. I think we all always teach each other, about music and things that we're into, and it's a very loving staff. I don't think they're the type of record head types at all, and I'm really grateful for that, because I think working at a record store anywhere else, you know, or even in a bigger city in the South, like in Atlanta or New Orleans, the experience would be very different.
Talk a little bit about that semester you spent in Finland. Was there music there? You know, did you feel isolated or stranded, or what was it like?
Well, in the city that I was in, which is called Tampere, and that's a little bit far away from the capital of Helsinki, just about 2 hours. But initially before going there, I thought, well, I can commute to Helsinki anytime I want. It's only 2 hours by train. I can probably see a lot of shows there, but that really did not end up being the case since I was there during the colder months, and it's really quite hard to go out, especially for a trip that long, for one night. So the city that I lived in, sort of hard to describe, but I definitely saw a lot of really unique shows that happened in like basements of certain art spaces and things like that.
Yeah.
Remember one of my last nights I was there, I went to a show that was in a basement of an art space that someone was opening up. I came in a little bit after it started, but there was a man playing banjo by candlelight, singing in a very American accent.
Wow.
It was so strange, and I talked to him after his performance. I think he was from South Carolina or something, so that was a very interesting performance I saw. But the city that I lived in is home to a record label called Sonal Records, which is a pretty renowned Finnish label that isn't so active anymore. They're definitely not defunct or anything like that, but I don't think they're taking on any more new artists. But they have a lot of independent releases in the 2000s of various Finnish electronic artists and a lot of like freak folk type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That really gained a lot of global critical attention. I definitely wouldn't say commercial attention, but they were definitely very buzzed about on blogs and stuff. And that record label was based in the city that I lived. So I always thought that was really neat, even though that was a scene that was a little bit more quiet by the time I got there. Just knowing that that had been something that was created and existed where I lived, I thought was really neat.
That is very cool. Yeah. You know, it's hard to get a sense, I think, at times what our streaming society and our online 24/7 connected society has done to local scenes, you know, whether it's strengthened them or, it's made them less important as far as a connection goes, I certainly, you know, anyone who listens to this show knows that I believe that it's still just as important as it ever was to make face-to-face connections and network with people and going out to see shows. Even though I'm too old to do that most of the time, I still encourage other people to do it. But it's cool to hear that, you know, those kind of things happen and that you can still stumble across like a banjo player from South Carolina and Finland. Yeah. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, you would think that the accessibility to these smaller and a little bit more weird scenes would be, you know, easier because of the technology that we have at our disposal. But I really don't think it is. I think a lot of times people that operate on a more like DIY level are still, you know, like a lot of times I see Facebook events for things. That's a big way that I make it out to any type of really small show.
Mm-hmm.
I would say sometimes these scenes are still just running like really below the current, and it can take quite a bit of time living in a place to familiarize yourself with who's involved and how can you, where is it happening?
Yeah.
How can you get there? You know, and maybe that speaks a little bit more to my personality, just being a little bit more reserved, perhaps someone who's more outgoing and has their, you know, nose looking out for where the things are happening might have an easier time. But in my experience, it's been, you know, it's a bit of a challenge to find where people are creating and making cool things happen. It's just, it's a process.
You know, I don't think that the streaming evolution that we've gone into now has necessarily been bad for music or threatened its health in any way. And I think in many ways it strengthens it, because especially if you look at a platform like Bandcamp, you know, that allows you to upload, you know, basically anything and sell a product, you know, if you've made it in your bedroom. And
yeah, I would definitely agree that I don't think it's damaged the energy behind people who are creating and making stuff happen. And I think in a way, streaming's really been a blessing to people who might not have had the funds, one, or two, like live in a proximity where they can go to record stores and really create big.
Right.
You know, if you have access to Spotify, you know, especially on a desktop where you can like scroll through albums and you can look at the images, it's, you can really familiarize with things, yourself with things that you may not have been able to do 20 or 30 years ago in the same way or with the same ease. To that end, maybe it makes it a little bit too disposable. You take in all these albums that you research and then you just sort of forget about it and you move on. And maybe that's a downside. I don't think it's for me to say, but, it's personally been something I feel like has helped me become a better listener and writer and just fan of music in general. And that's something I'm really happy about. And, you know, I think even with Bandcamp or with the smaller platforms, there's been a lot of excellent work done with archiving a lot of things from the past.
Yeah.
That might have completely gone away with time had someone not taken the effort to like take that up and put it up. I'm thinking specifically of a release I ran across on Bandcamp about, I'm trying to think what time period it was from, but it was just archiving punk recordings from the Alabama scene, I think from the 80s, early 80s,
okay,
late 80s or so. It was called I Have the Bible Belt Around My Neck or something like that.
Okay.
And I ran across this on Bandcamp and I just thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. I was so happy that someone took the time to, you know, like organize this material that they had found and archive a scene that I didn't even know existed. I think a lot of people wouldn't suspect that there was a really robust punk scene in Alabama at one time, but
right,
there was.
Right.
That's something you can find now with Bandcamp. And I think that's awesome.
You know, just while we're sitting here talking, I looked it up and found it right away. And it's a various artist on Foreign Legion Records. I've got the Bible Belt around my throat.
Let's go.
and not a song longer than 2 minutes and 10 seconds, it looks like, which,
yeah,
it looks like great. Super great. Well, Anna, this has been wonderful, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk, and I really wanted to introduce you to the Rock in the Suburbs community, and I hope that you would be kind enough to come back when we have a certain topic that might be up your alley, or if you have something to talk about, it would be wonderful to add your voice to our listeners and contributors.
I would love to come back. I really do listen to Rock in the Suburbs a lot. And I've learned a lot of interesting things about music from listening to y'all's podcast. I know that you got to go, but one thing I was thinking about on my way home to do this interview was you guys' episode on Chumbawamba Tubdubdin.
Yeah.
A lot of the information that I learned in that episode has really stuck with me for whatever reason. So I'm very happy to have spoken with you and really glad that you invited me out.
Thank you, Anna. I'm going to put you on the spot. What's a song that we can play out with here on Rock in the Suburbs?
Oh, my goodness. This is so on the spot. I guess, how about African and White by China Crisis? That was a song that stuck in my head earlier today.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on once again, and I hope we will hear your voice soon.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, great to hear from Anna. Fresh voice. You know, we're always looking for folks that, you know, want to talk about music. And it's always, you know, great to hear new voices on the show. So I was really happy to introduce her.
Awesome. All right. No, I think the listeners really like it when we do these interviews with the college students because it gives a different perspective
totally.
On music that a lot of our core listeners, who might resemble us a little bit
yeah.
more
<That's>
in our experiences,
right.
they like yeah. to hear how the younger folk are
are
relating to music these days. All right, the way you can let us know about things, any things, music related, what have you, you can call 612-440-1984. Leave a message there. We'd love to get your voice on an upcoming show.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can email rock@suburbspod.com. Or you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. That's it so far on the social media.
That's all we got.
As far as we've gone.
Yep.
But all those have the same handle, which is Suburbs Pod. Consider supporting the show at patreon.com/suburbspod. There's also some bonus material there if you are a contributor at least the $5 a month level. Also, please visit our website, suburbspod.com, where you can find show notes on every episode, including the songs that we play
yep.
on every episode. And there's also this really, really cool feature there. There's the song database.
I so love
you can
that
search
thing.
The database by artist or song title
mm-hmm.
or the different themes that we do of shows, and you
yeah.
can find the any song that we've ever played on this show is listed there. All right, let's get out of here.
Okay.
Let's move on to next week where we're going to talk about new music
mm-hmm.
from the month of February,
that's
the
cool.
short month of February, but
yep.
there was a lot of good stuff that
yeah,
came
there really
out.
Was.
And then also the interview with Martin Phillips of
yeah,
The Chills.
That's huge.
It'll be the second part of next week.
Milestone.
And I mentioned that if you are a patron of the show of at least $5 a month or more, you get some bonus material on the Patreon page.
Yes, you do.
And a good example of that would be that the uncut interview with Martin Phillips was posted there in advance. It's up there right now.
You could listen to it right now by making a small donation.
Right, exactly.
That's it. So that's one of the cool things.
Just one example. We're going to keep doing stuff like that.
Yep.
So, all right, let's get out of here. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Sit around and, you know, wax nostalgic about the Maxell days.